Excuse me. Good morning. Today I'm going to tell you about some research that I've been doing looking at the changes in total carbon in systems dealing with integrated crop livestock, agroecosystems, sorry. This research is located in Lubbock, Texas, and you can see that's this star here. We're about 390 miles northwest of San Antonio. It's located within an area known as the Southern High Plains, which is this area shaded in gray. And this is part of a semi-arid climate, and so on average we receive approximately 500 millimeters of rainfall a year. However, this has been an extremely dry year. As of Friday last week, we had received approximately 61 millimeters of rainfall. So we suffer from issues such as limited water availability. Also, typically the soils are have low soil fertility, high risk for soil erosion, and in general we have very stressful conditions during the growing season. Now, because of these different issues, alternative management practices known as integrated crop livestock systems are being investigated. And these systems tend to maintain profitability while also conserving environmental resources for the area. And so by coupling large vegetative inputs with lower disturbance rates, they have been shown to have the potential to increase carbon sequestration. So this is an example of the system that was designed. It was actually installed in 1997 at the research station. At this point, they were comparing a monoculture cotton system, which is the most dominant agricultural practice for the area, with an ICL system, or an integrated crop livestock system, in which they had a field of oval bluestem and then two fields planted in rotation with rye, cotton, wheat, and a fallow period. Like I said, these were started in 1997 and continued through till 2008, and then were allowed to rest for 2 years before they were rolled over into a new long-term integrated crop livestock system. This is some examples of what the vegetation looked like at the time of sampling. We can see here this is over bluestem, large amounts of above-ground biomass, the cattle grazing on the some wheat here, and then, of course, cotton. So overall, our objectives for this study were to measure the changes in soil carbon and the soil aggregate proportions for these two systems. And more specifically, we wanted to determine what, if any, influences these management practices might have on aggregate proportions and their total carbon content. Excuse me. So I'd like to switch the focus a little bit now and talk about soil aggregates in general. And there are several benefits associated with soil aggregates. The one, however, we're most interested in for this study deals with their ability to protect soil organic matter. Now, to obtain the different aggregate fractions that we used for the study, we used a method described by Six et al. In 2000, in which field moist soils were gently passed through an 8-millimeter sieve to homogenize the sample, and then the soils were then washed through successively smaller sieves to obtain different aggregate fractions. The first set of sieving produces the large and small macroaggregates. This is typically what we associate with the more labile carbon within the system. The next set of aggregates is the microaggregate fraction, and this is where we typically find our more recalcitrant carbon. And then finally, any remaining material is the silt and clay fraction, and this is typically primary particles and where we find our microbial byproducts. Now take it to the next step, and actually what the previous speaker was talking about, the aggregates within the macroaggregates, we subsample our macroaggregate fraction and pass this through an aggregate isolator built by Dr. Johann Six at UC Davis and gladly allowed us to use at our lab, the soil samples are placed in this the isolator, and using continuous agitation and a steady stream of water produces three separate interaggregate fractions. The first is the interaggregate particulate organic matter, or also known as coarse palm, and this is typically where we find our younger, more labile carbon. The next fraction is the interaggregate microaggregate fraction, and this has been associated with the more recalcitrant, older carbon. And finally, again, the remaining material is an interaggregate silt and clay fraction, again, made up of primary particles. Excuse me. Now, how these aggregates actually start to form within the system. This is a diagram, again, from Six et al. In 2000. And what you see here, we have our macro aggregate, and within that, pieces of fine and coarse particulate organic matter. Over time, this organic matter begins to break down, and you can see there are some losses of carbon through respiration. But over time, we start to form those interaggregate, microaggregate fractions, continuing until the microbial decomposition starts to decrease as they use up that readily available soil carbon, and eventually that protective coating is lost, and those interaggregate fractions are exposed to continued degradation. Now, if we introduce some kind of disturbance, such as what we see in the continuous cotton system, that process is shortened significantly. And you can see those interaggregate fractions, the formation of those interaggregate fractions is interrupted, and that interaggregate organic matter is exposed, breaks down very quickly. We see large losses of carbon through respiration, and the process begins again. So based on this information, it was hypothesized that in general, proportions of aggregates and their associated soil carbon would change significantly in these two systems. More specifically, what we expect to see is that in the integrated crop livestock system, proportions of those macro, micro, and interaggregate microaggregate fractions and also their associated carbons would increase. And through that interaggregate microaggregate, where we see that protected carbon pool, we would increase the potential for carbon sequestration in these systems. In the continuous cotton system, we expect to see a breakdown of the susceptible and stable aggregate fractions. However, we did expect to see an increase in the interaggregate particulate organic matter or fresher carbon fraction. Now, to test this, we subsampled soils collected in 1997 prior to the establishment of these sites, and then sampled again in 2010 to a depth of 15 centimeters. These soils went through the aggregate fractionation method I just described, producing a whole soil and six individual aggregate fractions, which were then analyzed for total nitrogen and total carbon on our LECO TruSpec CN analyzer in the lab. So the first question that comes up is whether or not 13 years was long enough to affect the aggregate distribution of the proportions within the soil. And in fact, it does. Here, I'll set up the graphs a little bit. They'll be fairly consistent throughout the remaining talk. You'll see the continuous cotton here on the left, integrated crop livestock system on the right. Along the x-axis, the different aggregate fractions are separated for each system. And what we're looking at here is a comparison over time with the samples from 1997 in the gray and the samples from 2010 in the blue. Here we're seeing the changes in the proportion of aggregates in grams per gram of aggregate per gram of total soil sample. And overall, we saw a significant increase in almost all of the fractions. In the case of the continuous cotton, there was a significant change in all fractions except for this microaggregate fraction. And then, again, in the ICL system, we saw a similar trend. There was no significant change in that microaggregate fraction or the interaggregate silt and clay fraction, but we did see significant changes in all the others. And we saw a similar trend in both systems. However, the magnitude of the change is what's different. In the cotton system, in this IPOM fraction, we saw almost 180% increase in that fraction for the cotton. However, in the ICL system, we saw only an 80% increase over time. When we look at the I micro fraction, again, the more recalcitrant protected carbon, we saw a 30% decrease in the continuous cotton system. However, we only saw a 15% decrease in the overall proportion of those aggregates in the ICL system. This led into the next question of whether or not there was a significant impact on overall total soil carbon. And what we found is that in the continuous cotton system, we saw no significant change in overall total soil carbon. However, in the ICL system, we saw almost a 22% increase in total soil carbon from 1997 to 2010. So when we couple those together, next we want to know is how does that carbon distribution change within the aggregate fractions? So here, a graph similar to the first graph we saw. In this case, though, we're looking at total carbon content for 1997 and again in 2010. And the first thing that I'd like to point out is that in the ICL system, we have this large macro aggregate fraction present that was not isolated in the continuous cotton system. And when we look at the overall total carbon content for these, we see that in both systems, there was no significant change in the microaggregate fraction. However, we look at the total carbon for this soil, we actually saw a significant decrease in total carbon in the continuous cotton system and a significant increase in the ICL system. Again, when we look at the IPOM fraction, we also saw a significant increase. Here was almost 400% increase in total carbon in the continuous cotton system. However, when we look at that similar fraction in the ICL system, it was still an increase, although slightly smaller. No significant change in the interaggregate microaggregate fraction for carbon. However, we did see a significant increase in the carbon content in the ICL system. This graph is just another way of looking at that, so I'm going to move on to my next graph. And this is actually looking at the total carbon collected in 2010 for both sites. Here we have the continuous cotton in the green and the ICL system in the gray. I lost my colors for a second. And here you can see that in all cases except for the silt and clay fraction and the interaggregate silt and clay fraction, we saw significantly greater carbon content in the ICL system compared to the continuous cotton system. So in conclusion, what we found is that although we saw no significant increase in total soil carbon in the continuous cotton system, we did see a redistribution of that carbon into that fresher interaggregate palm fraction. However, in the ICL system, not only did we see an increase overall in total soil carbon, but we saw an increase of that protected interaggregate microaggregate fraction, where we find typically associated with the most recalcitrant carbon fractions. And with that, I would like to thank my major advisor, Dr. Jeffrey Marcusera, Dr. Vivian Allen, who initiated this research in 1997, all of our student workers, and also the Southern SARE program for the funding for this project. And with that, I will take any questions. Well, I think for this system, because part of half of the system is actually a no-till grassland system, that carbon is being fairly well protected and potentially sequestered for long periods of time. Because part of the system does include a rotation cropping, I think that is where some of that fresher carbon was coming into play. But overall, the system is able to incorporate and funnel that carbon from that fresher fraction into that more protected. I'm not actually sure if I'm answering your question.
I was thinking about something like, how would it say that carbon from the head ended up in the coarse palm fraction?
Mm-hmm.
Would infiltration be different, the amount of surface runoff that you would get?
Potentially, and these are clay loam soils, so I would anticipate any change in organic matter content in all would have an effect on those parameters, things like infiltration, overall CEC, those types of parameters would definitely be impacted. And that also may play into how well these soils are able to hold on to that carbon in the long run.